Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thanks for being here. It means a lot. Let's go down into it. I had a very nice educational day yesterday, with today being Sunday. I'm recording this the day of my intended upload. So yesterday, I woke up pretty early, and I decided to take a dose of mushroom, which is something I do quite frequently. I got a new bag recently of this strain called Penis Envy, and they're like obnoxiously potent. But the brain is a weird thing, you know. When I think of brain, I mean that reasoning element of our being. Someone might call the intellect. It's like we have this computer in our system that has the ability to take inputs and chunk them and make outputs, and I call this reason. But I do also believe that there are many other aspects of our personality, and I also think that there are pieces of our being that are outside of our biology and might even have connections to other systems. But all that might just be genuflection, and I might be getting a little woo-doo there. But the brain, the computer, our reason, our intellect has a lot of control, you know, and most of the time we are driving the car, so to say. You know, we have our hands on the wheels, and in this analogy, the car would be the reasoning element, and the car would be the brain, you know, and decisions would be the steering wheel. I have this very strange relationship with my reason now, because I've been moving out, and I've been slowly getting outside of that little room in my house. Like, it's like you look outside of this little closet that you've been in your whole life, and you see a lot of space, a lot of immensity and cause and probability of just our space and our presence in reality, you know. And while we're reasoning, it's like, yes, we have a lot of control over things, and we can implement our reason to incur changes, and we can see the responses of our actions on our environment. And that makes us feel powerful, and we forget that we're just in this little closet. I hope anybody's following any of these metaphors. And I have a very, very strange relationship with hallucinogens and my reason, because I've been taking hallucinogens for so long that it's like performing a magic spell sometimes, and I have to do it right, and I almost have to jinx myself. Like, I have to, if I plan my adventures to any extreme, like if I'm on my way home and I think about taking something, the time it takes me to get home is too much thought process behind it for me to ruminate on it. Like, I have to have enough spontaneity and whimsy into it, and that's when I have my best moments and I learn something, is when I don't have any compulsions to do it and I don't plan it. And compelling and planning are all under the dominion of reason. To stretch the metaphor even a little bit more, reason itself is just one of this family of entities of being that are within the group name of ego. You know, an ego is all these desire systems. And a lot of our desires and a lot of the things that push us towards making choices might be subconscious. And so that's why I say reason is the noticeable participant in the ego. Maybe that's another way of describing it. So DMT is the hardest for me, because I'll ruin it for myself 1 out of 3 times with expectations and with that reasoning element. And I can watch it happen, where I'll be trying to disattach from a lot of sections of my brain, which is part of the reason why I use these substances, is because it helps me distance myself from the thought train. And for a second, I can just be in awareness. And that is a deceleration of sorts, if that makes any sense. And when I could slow down a little bit, I can stop running so rampantly. And that's part of where I get a lot of healing out of using these things, is simply because of that deceleration. But while I'm trying to disattach, there'll be a little voice that'll come up in the back of my head, and it'll just start saying silly little things, you know? And like with a highly visionary substance like dimethyltryptamine, the hallucinations, especially when you're initially starting, like I always think that somebody who's very new to something, like somebody who hasn't had a lot of experience with hallucinogens, like with psychedelics as a whole, they are very lucky. And when they first start coming into this world, they're treated very well. It's the oldies. It's the ones who've been, you know, doing these things for a very long time, decades maybe. Like I've been taking psychedelics for over 12 years now, frequently. And it's like I have frequent flyer miles when I get into this world. And it's like I have a lot of tricks I know how to play on myself at this point. You know, whereas a newbie might not have a lot of those intellectual tricks. And so, like, you would expect to see something really cool, but it's not just about the visionary aspect. It's not just about what you're going to see in the distortions. You know, there's a feeling in that deceleration that is hard to put into words. That itself, that connection with something is so much more important than a visual hallucination. And sometimes that's just a distraction. And so I'll be sitting there with the substance coming on, and all of a sudden a little voice will be up, oh, I don't see anything yet. Do you see anything? I don't see anything yet. That's like a little heckler. It's like, wow, did you smoke enough? Did you take enough? You know, it's like all these stupid little questions. And all of a sudden I have this feeling of doubt about it, and I miss it altogether. I miss all the magic because I'm all mired up in reasonable doubt. You know, and I'm firmly in my closet and I don't get to see any of the rest of the cool things, you know. And that's a weird story way of trying to explain like how devious I see expectation to be. And expectation could have a lot more impact even outside of chemical substances. You know, say you're about to go meet a female or a male, and it doesn't matter what gender you are specifically, you know. Like, but you're going to go meet some new person and you're nervous about meeting them, this new person. You have expectations about who they are. And this just happened to me where I had been talking to this girl and I had gotten her number and her photograph was a little dated. And also I had the expectation because my sister was like, she's very pretty. And I was like, oh, cool. So I had this expectation that I was like, she's very pretty. But like, I formed all these feelings before I ever met her, and when I met her in person in like kind of a jaded way, you know, I wasn't immediately attracted to her. And it hurt me because I thought that I was bigger than that just to be like only drawn by physical stuff. But I'd set up all these expectations about what I thought she was going to be before I met her, and it ruined it. And you know who ruined it? Me, not her. She was a very nice person. But I ruined myself and I ruined my potentials for having a friendship or even maybe a relationship because of expectation settings that I'd done in my head prior to it, you know? So there's a lot of things outside of chemical land and just getting high where these lessons I feel that I've learned apply, you know? I really believe that. And I also really believe these things are helpful. So anybody can fight me on that. Anyways, so yeah, yesterday morning I had took in and I was planning on lemon-teching some of these very strong mushrooms, these penis envy mushrooms. And usually they kick me in the butt. So I had all these expectations and a little bit of fear about it, you know, and fear is just another one of those expectations that lays up, you know, potential realities that reason starts to chew on and starts to think is real. But none of those potential realities that come from future telling and fortune telling and attempting to make, you know, guesstimations about the future, which is bullshit, you know, none of that's real. And so I think I lemon teched. Have any of you tried lemon tech yet, by the way? That is phenomenal. never going back. It's a grand way to consume these things. LemonTech is using lemon juice, which is the acid, obviously, from the fruit. It's just very, you know, citricky. And your stomach acid is also acidic, obviously. So you put the boomsies into the juice, which for like 20 minutes, and that supposedly is like digesting them for a significant point of time before you ever eat them. And this is the first time I'm ever going to do a recommendation. If anybody does do that, LemonTech is the way to go. You want to digest it on the outside. There's been a lot of people saying that the psilocybin molecule itself, which is a prodrug for psilocin, when it's breaking down into psilocin in the stomach, it's something about that process that causes the nausea. And it's happened even when people have eaten pure psilocybin outside of the mushroom body, because even a pure isolate, people will get nauseous when it breaks down into psilocin. So if you break it down outside your body and you consume just psilocin, it hits very quickly and there's very little stomach issues or any body bogged downness that I have always found very distressing sometimes and also distracting from my process when I'm trying to decelerate. So our LemonTech, like approximately a little bit less than a gram, which I've eaten a tenth of a gram of penis abuse before. It got my ass kicked. So like I had expectations yet again where I thought, you know, like this could hurt. And it was a little underwhelming, to be honest. You know, I had a really interesting experience, you know. So usually I take a bath on the come up, which I didn't do. And I was cleaning my house. I started out a little active. And a lot of the times it's hard for me to tell on the come up after a LemonTech because I'll forget I take it. You know, when I chew on them, there's this, all the cramping, and like I always get kind of nauseous. And so I have all these physical tellers telling me it's entering my body. Whereas a LemonTech, a lot of the times I forget I take it. And so, you know, when I start to sense it in the backgrounds of my conscious, I could feel it, like this lightness. It's indescribable, you know. Dimethyltryptamine and psilocybin are both very close in connection. Like last week's episode, I used the metaphor of a family. In this situation, these two are like fraternal twins, not identical because they have different genetic makeups, but they came from the same parent and they're very damn close from the same batch. And there's this warmth involved with it. There's a sense of peace that comes when I've laid down, you know, like there's this settling. And within that warmth is a complete acceptance of my place and where I am. And with that acceptance comes a confidence for my future and for my wishes and for my wills and all of my attempts towards being a good person. I start to feel confident in that, and I feel confident in my optimism and my compassion, because for a second I'm just setting down all these thoughts and I'm just laying down. And often I'll just listen to music. And to be honest, I had all of that. But for some reason, even though I don't get a visionary experience often, I was looking for something, distortion, you know, some fun, some hat trick, some cotton candy, some flair, some things that I didn't really need, you know. And I was just getting bumped, and I started doubting and wishing I'd consume more. And it's funny how a lot of people are afraid of overwhelming themselves, and they should be. You don't want to take too much, even though it does and it will happen at some point, especially if you are putting your traveler's hat on and you're getting into this world. This is a path of some sorts. You know, it will happen one day where you will overshoot. But with my existential fear of boredom in this reality, I'm almost more terrified of underwhelming myself than overwhelming. Because when I find myself wanting more, you know, and I kept telling myself yesterday, it's like, I was looking at that little voice and I was very upset because it was taking up a lot of my mental space and a lot of my mental energy. And I could feel this, one of my favorite things, entering into my system. And here's this little snipey voice like, and I'm just like, what the fuck, dude? And I was calling it like hungry, hungry hippo, you know, because it's just this hungry bitch that just wants more. And like, I had plenty. I was refusing acceptance because of that wish for more. Like, but I wouldn't say it dominated my whole experience. I was having a lot of these like weird, what do you call it? Like daydreams almost, you know, where I'd like close my eyes and I was intensely comfortable, like intensely comfortable. And my music was just phenomenal. And I would go into these little spaces of like very real, almost like movies of like people I've never seen and things going on. But it's like a short clip, like a 15-second clip, and then it's like you flash back to openness. And so that's why I call it like the daydream, because it's like it was like dreaming while awake, which is a phenomenon I've gotten with psilocybin at very high doses especially, which is another indicator showing me that the medicine was working. It's just I was getting in my own way with expectations. Just now I had mentioned my fear of boredom. Let's talk about that a little bit more. You know, does anybody else like to be bored? Think about it. Like, how do you feel about boredom? I'm going to go out on a limb and just guess that nobody likes to be bored. But I do think that there is a spectrum of how sensitive people are to boredom's clutches. Like, yeah, I know, like, there's that blanket term ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is something that I certainly carried, that label, and I don't exactly agree that there's a blanket statement or mental disease that could be imparted upon a person because of certain traits, but some people are wound up. Some people have a lot of extra energy. I read this book last year. It was on sensory perception disorder, and I liked it because they weren't trying to medicate it out, but it was basically just looking at how people take in sensation, and through the perception of their sensations, they have an opinion about what they do. But it's like everybody has different equipment, so we all might have ears, but you know, certain people might have better hearing than others. Some people might have no hearing. And in a world where you might not have your vision, you might not have your hearing, you could still have a perceptible world. And so the way that your cognitive reason is being handed your sensations could affect you. So say you're not a very sensitive person and you can't feel very well, you can't hear very well. If you're not very sensitive, you're going to try to stimulate yourself according to the SPD book. And so by trying to stimulate yourself, you might take risky behaviors. And so the ADHD kid under this lens is purely understimulated internally. So they're trying to seek all these sensations to keep themselves going. And it's like, I think one of the other examples the book used was like somebody who has an anxiety disorder, anxiety itself helps stimulate the body. So if somebody is an understimulated person, it might be this weird system where they're using anxiety to get themselves going, because without the anxiety, they don't have the natural energy to do it because they're understimulated. So like, yeah, that's kind of interesting. And it gets me thinking about connections with boredom. And like my biggest fear, like in this world, like in this life, and I wake up in the morning and I'm already thinking about this fear of just, what am I going to do? How am I going to fill my day? What am I going to do? Like, I've gotten so much better as I've gotten older at learning how to slow down and trying really hard to take my time with things. Because I'm just such a rapid individual. And in my youth, that meant that I always had to have at my hip a connection to my Game Boy or to a book. Like when I turned 18, one of the first times I had to go to the DMV by myself and go handle something at a government building, I almost lost my mind because I had never been physically forced to sit somewhere. I think my phone died and I wasn't reading because I was like dumb. And so I had nothing to entertain myself with, and I hadn't been stuck in a situation where I couldn't entertain myself, and I lost it, and I was so miserable. Like, my misery is boredom. And as long as I have something to do, even if it's not a task that's preferred, it's always better than not doing anything at all for me. And I've had to teach myself over time how to be comfortable with not stimulating myself. And a lot of that comes from, practices and meditation and being able to sit and just feel the body's rhythms and to watch the thought train, the thought river for just a little bit and just watch the things flow and just stepping outside of it, not holding them and getting outside of that closet of reason. Like, a lot of that took intense practice and a want to, and a awareness of what I was doing to myself by just running myself ragged. So we can have a relationship with this concept of boredom, just like we can have a relationship with objects, which all chemicals would be material objects in some ways. So we have relationships with chemicals, we have relationships with our phones, social networks, abstract systems of words, all definitely just objects representing thoughts. We can have relationships with people too. But the relationship itself is a very crucial piece. When we're relating to something, it's a give and take. And when we're relating with an object or a person, it's impressing upon us and making us want things or changing our compulsions. But we can also affect through choice and responsibility, and by looking at our own whims, we can have responsibility over what we choose. So that's where the aspect of our impact on the relationship comes. And we can change our relationships to things where we don't want to be around them anymore, especially with toxic objects and toxic ideas. And so always consider how much virility you have. You are amazingly bright. You are a force to be reckoned with. And that doesn't have to be a force of control. But you are an active participant in your life. You can be okay with being bored. You can be not okay with being bored. You can give up, or you can institute practices and try to teach yourself how to do things differently. Within boredom, expectation can further enrage and infuriate your responses to any situation. Your reason can use boredom and expectations to help coerce you to think that it is the only source of information in the universe. And once that is instituted, you no longer have trust, and you can lose trust and authority, and you can lose community that way. And that could lead to hyper individualization, which is a very far away from love. So I hope some of these considerations help one of you out there. These are things I've been thinking about for myself. I'm optimistic to think that other people probably are in the similar human condition as I. If you'd like to talk about any of these ideas, mano a mano, you can find me on Facebook at the Gingerbread Man's Dialogues. And you can also email me at thegingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com. I'd love to talk to you and to feel out your ideas, and if you have any corrections or if you have any disagreements, I'd love to air that out as well. I think that is very functional, and I think it could be constructive for the both of us. Yeah, that's about my gas for tonight, this morning. I literally just woke up. I don't know why I said tonight. I'm going to go grab a book, and I'm going to do a couple quotations, and we'll let Odin wrap us up today. So, you're loved, and you're a beautiful being, and I'm so grateful that you woke up and took a breath this morning. All right, first, I'm going to be quoting from, I think I mentioned this guy last week. It's this dude named Paramahansa Yogananda. He was a yogi that did a lot of teachings in the 1930s. He came to America and started a bunch of ashrams, which are like communities, metaphysical, mystical communities of people with like-minded goals towards spirituality, usually underneath some leader or guru. Some of them went really bad and culty. Some of his might. I bet you there's a lot of negative information about this guy. But I just never see any faulty person as completely connected to their work, if that makes any sense. Like, I've read the works of a lot of bad people that are empirically bad, and I've still gotten good information out of dirt. And I don't really have a feeling about this guy as if he's a bad guy. But I just want to curb the criticism on the nose, because just because it's a yogi or a guru, just because it's like Osho or, you know, like, who's to say that some of their philosophy still didn't have some merit? And I'm still going to read it. All right. Another warning, this has a lot of God talk. You know, this was a dude who was trying to teach that we self-realization and renunciation of base humanity and to see our own divinity. And so it's not exactly the God of the Christian Bible. It's not the same distinction, because in this system, we are not separate from God. So here goes. I'm going to the hills to be alone with God, a student informed the master. You will not advance spiritually in that way, Paramahansaji replied. Your mind is not yet ready to concentrate deeply on spirit. Your thoughts will dwell mostly on memories, people, and worldly pastimes, even though you remain in a cave. Cheerful performance of your earthly duties, coupled with daily meditation, is the better path. And what I got out of this was that it doesn't matter if you're in a cave, doesn't matter if you leave the country, doesn't matter if you're at home, you can approach your spirituality anywhere. Gazing one Sunday morning at the masses of the blossoms that decorated the temples, the master said, because God is beauty, he created loveliness in the flowers that they might speak of him. More than anything else in nature, they hint at his presence. His shining face peeks out of the windows of lilies and forget-me-nots. In the fragrance of the rose, he seems to say, seek me. That is his mode of speech. Otherwise, he remains silent. He shows his handiwork in the beauty of creation. He doesn't reveal that he himself is hidden there. Last one. All right, this one's kind of weird. And it's kind of like I don't believe, yeah, I'll talk after this one, right? On Earth, God is trying to evolve the universal art of right living by encouraging in men's hearts feelings of brotherhood and appreciation for others, the master said. He has therefore permitted no nation to be complete in itself. To the members of each race, he has given some special aptitude, some unique genius, with which they may make a distinctive contribution to the world's civilization. Peace on Earth will be hastened by a constructive exchange among nations of their best features. Ignoring the faults of a race, we should discern and emulate its virtues. It is important to note that the great saints of history have personified the ideals of all lands and have embodied the highest aspirations of all religions. All right, like, I don't think everybody's that different, but I like where his head's going with this. It's like you have to lean on others' strengths, and that the way of the world is for those who have something that they lack is by accepting and working together with others of that strength. And at the end of the day, it's community. like, I dig it. All right. I'll read from my DAO. Look for a good chapter here. There are two of them today. Let yin predominate over yang. This is chapter 76. When we are born, we are soft and supple. But when we've perished, there's no more tenderness to be cherished. When the plants are young, they are pliant and fragile. When they die, as they lose their green, they wither and dry. The sharp sword and knife tryst always with death, while love without strife is ever devoted disciple of life. An inflexible army seals its own fate. When a tree branch grows brittle, it easily snaps, whether long or little. Wherever you go, the rigid lie low, while the weightless in the sky and all that is gentle fly boundlessly high. You know what? I'm going to read you one of mine. This is a poem I wrote a couple days ago this week. Here goes. Pearly thoughts embedded in lives, so sparkly, addictive as rumination. Egonauts dive deeper, far inside, past illusions from another nation. Look closer, it shines, our center, small, yet infeasibly huge, intact, invisible, yet all there is, enter, impossible to hold, is and is not a fact. Who are you when we are we? When will I be inside of me? Countless moments in ascension, pale in comparison to life's attention. All right, guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You are the reason I'm here. Let's go grabo.
Hello, bye.
No, you did that last week. Say something.
I just keep bringing my ideas.
What are you interested in? You wanna hold my throat's done? That helps you talk.
Yeah.
Oh, go. Tell them what we did yesterday.
Well,
what did we do yesterday?
I forgot.
You forgot what we did yesterday?
Yes.
We went hiking.
Yeah, we went hiking.
They can't hear you when you talk at the ground.
Yeah, we went hiking.
Mm-hmm. It was a nice day.
Yeah, it was a really nice day yesterday.
It was. You know my favorite part about it was?
What?
Hanging out with you. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
What's that?
None of your business.
Oh, jeez. All right. Well, I think he's still a little sleepy, but that's okay. I'm sure some of you are sleepy too. So, thanks, guys.
Bye. Have a great day.